You're tuned in to the Health After 30 podcast, and today's episode is talking about breaking patterns that keep us stuck, keep us in frustrated or stressful situations, or are just keeping us on the road to burnout. We're going to learn how to break these patterns and create a new identity for our lives. Hey, I'm Alana Bonneman, naturopath and holistic nutritionist. This podcast is dedicated to reclaiming your health by harnessing yourself as your biggest asset. Get ready, because this is where we stand up for your body's ability to heal, go against outdated norms, and say yes to change, creating true and lasting success, all from the inside out. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Health After 30 podcast, and let's get started. Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Health After 30 podcast. You're tuned in to Alana, and today I have the pleasure of sitting down and talking with George Haymaker, a certified solution-focused and transformational neuroscience coach and consultant. His main purpose in life is to help people have a transformational experience. He's gone through something himself, which he'll tell us about, and it got him to the point where he wanted to help people have this same transition. What I love most about this whole conversation is that we all get stuck in patterns. We all have certain triggers that then roll out into the same things. You know, we get into the same arguments with the same people about the same things, or there's just certain patterns that we're stuck with that keep us stressed and keep us frustrated. And George comes in and he takes, I almost want to say, a radical approach. I asked him, how should we be doing this? And his answer to that really shocked me. And I just sat with it. And I thought, yes, if all of us could start making these changes, basically in a way to work with ourselves, work with our brains, work with our bodies in order to transform ourselves, how much different life would be. So I really, really enjoyed today's conversation, and I hope you do as well. If you do, feel free to share it with someone who might need to hear it as well. You can also leave a review or a rating. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Alana Bonneman, and let's get into today's episode. Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Health After 30 podcast. Today, I am joined with George Haymaker. George, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Hey, my pleasure, Alana. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm also looking forward to this conversation for a few different reasons. But first, let me start with something I read on your website. It's kind of the first thing you see when you hop on your website. And then the second thing I'm excited about is your whole backstory that got you here. And then how you came to all these conclusions. So what you say is, you land on your website and it says, optimize your brain, master your mind, maximize your potential, and seize your advantage. I feel like there's so much packed into that, which makes someone want to say, tell me more. I want to say, like, so how did you get there?
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. The website's obviously doing its job then. So I've been kind of a long route. I'm 64 years old. Was an entrepreneur early on. Out of college, I actually worked for a large hotel company, did that for 8 years, and realized that I wanted to focus on my own destiny. I wanted to, you know, create whatever was going to end up being mine. I wanted to create it myself. And so that was, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. I just knew that I had this need for significance, and I wanted to figure out how to create my own destiny. So that's what I did for about 30 years of founding and building different small to medium sized businesses in different industries. Along the way, though, I was struggling with a lot of mental discomfort. I had grown up in an environment that was privileged in many ways financially. My dad was a high achiever, but we, as a result, we moved around a lot. I probably moved about 35 times in my life. A lot of that was early on. Every year or so, we'd be in a new city, which, you know, had the effect of me having to say goodbye to friends, meet new friends, go into a new environment, find my way. I was also from the generation where we got disciplined a lot. So as I was getting more and more uncomfortable, through the instability of having to move a lot, I was acting out, and as a result, I was getting punished. So, you know, that had some effects on me. And then my parents moved to Australia when I was in ninth grade, and I went away to boarding school. So there was a continuation of having to fend for myself. So, you know, I got to college, and I was really uncomfortable in my own skin, experiencing a lot of anxiety. And I chose to medicate those symptoms with drugs and alcohol. I have a lot of addiction in my family. My mom's entire side of the family were addicts in one form or another. And when you combine genetic predisposition to addiction with early adverse childhood experiences, it makes it about 10 to 12 times more likely that you're going to develop into an addict, have an addiction problem. And that's what happened to me. So as I was being an entrepreneur and, you know, highly functioning in these businesses, I was also medicating with drugs and alcohol. And for anyone that knows anyone with addiction, it's a progressive disease. And sure enough, it got the better of me. In my early 50s, it had overcome me. It had taken over my life. And I was taking up to 50 pain pills a day and drinking 2 bottles of vodka. So it landed me in rehab. And, you know, at that moment, I had to take a hard look at myself, you know, what had happened to me, how I'd gotten there. And did I want to reach deep and figure out how to live life differently? Because I had only known one way. It was, you know, play hard, work hard, burning candles at both ends. And I just wasn't happy. And I was miserable and isolated. And it had really affected my relationships. And so it was tough. But fortunately, I did summon the wherewithal deep within to try again. And that, so for the last 12 years, I've been in recovery. And, you know, early on, I was in a 12-step program, but it really wasn't enough for me. I wanted to understand deeply what had happened in my brain, because, you know, addiction is a brain disease. And so I started reading a lot of books on psychology, spirituality initially. But what I found is it led me to the brain and neuroscience, because, again, everything that we are in our lives, everything that we're experiencing mentally, including addiction, all happens in the brain. And so I just, I was never much of a science guy in school, but I just became one and kind of nerded out on it and started reading a bunch of books. And then over the last few years, I took graduate level coursework and got credentialed in coaching. And so here I am. I've undergone a significant transformation in my own life, really, you know, focusing on a new identity, different way of living, which all involves, you know, rewiring the brain. We can get into that in a minute, what that means. But it was just such an amazing transformational experience for me that I'm at the age now where I want to try to give back and help others and see others kind of rebound from their struggles. And so that's what I do, is I help people in their own transformations, people that might be stuck or just want to figure out how to get more out of their brains or become more intimately aware of how they can work with their own brains. Because that's one thing I didn't have any idea. I just thought we got from our minds what we got from our minds and didn't have any input in it. And I was so wrong. And so that's what I try to do, is help people understand, build a relationship with their brains and understand how to either get more out of it or transform to a different way of being.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. You've been through hard times and then really hard times. The first thing that kind of comes to me, I wonder, is does everyone who's looking for the transformation, like you've experienced it because you've been put out of your comfort zone, you've gone through addiction.
I'd say many, many of us find change to be difficult. I mean, even just the concept of, you know, can I change? What comes next? What does it look like? How do I get there? And because we don't know what's involved, it feels really hard. Yeah. And that is the brain speaking to us. That heart, that it being hard, is the brain telling us it's unclear and unsure of where it is you're trying to take it. The brain's number one job is to manage resources within us to ensure our safety and survival. And so it's not worried about you finding or being able to afford a bigger house or buy a nicer car. It's worried about analyzing your environment, looking for threats, managing your resources to keep you safe and survive so that you can have babies and continue with the species. That's really it. It's been hardwired in us forever. And so when you are in a place that you're not happy with or you're finding it unhelpful and uncomfortable, the brain is okay with that because it knows that you're still safe and surviving. In other words, you know, you might be uncomfortable, but it still knows that it can keep you safe in this place. When you start contemplating complete changes, it doesn't know that that's going to be safe, and so it resists. And also when you talk about significant change, that requires resources, mental resources, focus, attention, you know, glucose, calories. It requires a lot of different resources, which expend a lot of these resources because, you know, we have to go experience something new. So the brain is resistant of that, and that's what feels hard for us.
Yeah, that's getting out of that comfort zone or, yeah, going to that unknown place. And usually that unknown place, it's not only unknown, but it might also be a bit scary. It's a place where we perhaps don't want to tap into because, you know, you talk about the mind and how it's connected with everything in our childhood, where, you know, we know now mental health issues and what's happened in the past is all connected. So yes, I can totally empathize and also understand that it's an unknown. And it's also probably what keeps us from even starting that journey, right? Like that kickstart.
Yeah. So this concept of things starting in childhood is really important because really what the mind is a bunch of patterns. It's a map. We have 85 billion neurons in our brain, and they all wire themselves together, make connections called neural pathways. And if you just think of like a map of Europe or a map of the United States with all the roads and they're just all going in different directions, that's what our brains look like. And these neurons are all connected to one another. The thing is everybody's brain maps look different because they're made up of all of our own individual experiences. So every time over our entire lives that we've ever thought anything or felt anything or behaved in any way, our neurons and our brains began to form patterns reflecting those experiences. And so from an early childhood, you know, we come into the world with some basic wiring. But then the wiring begins to shift and change based on the experiences that we're exposed to. And because everybody has different experiences, their maps end up being different. Okay, so the ones that have the most emotion, in other words, if we have difficult childhood experiences that are highly charged with emotion, those end up being the strongest patterns. So emotion is like gasoline on fire, okay? And so if we reenact certain patterns, like let's say we're stuck in an unhelpful pattern because of something that happened to us when we were young, and we continue to engage in that. Let's say it's like a threat to us. In my case, I was punished a lot, so I was always quick to anger, I was always defensive and hypersensitive that everything was a threat. And so I carried that pattern with me because it was highly charged with emotion throughout my childhood. And every time I engaged in it, it got stronger and stronger.
Mm.
It's very similar to going to the gym. And when you work out muscles, they get bigger and stronger. When you reenact these patterns over and over again through repetition, they get stronger and stronger.
Mm.
And so if you just think about, okay, if you're carrying these patterns with you into adulthood and you continue to engage in them, they get like really thick roots of a tree. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so the brain is okay with that because it still knows that you're alive and safe, relatively speaking. And so it wants to keep you in these patterns because it knows that it's doing its job, okay?
It knows what to expect.
It doesn't know anything different. And so that's why change is hard. Because really what you need to do to change is you need to, if you think about yourself as an old oak tree with these thick roots, and now you need to, you're going to envision something brand new for yourself. It's like going over to another part of your property and planting a brand new little sapling tree that you're going to have to nurture and fertilize and water while you're no longer being this old oak tree. And so really that's what transformation is. It's envisioning a brand new self for yourself that has different thoughts and feelings and actions and behaviors, and shifting over to that person and practicing being that person. And while you're doing that, the old person is no longer engaging in the old patterns, and that old oak tree is now getting weaker because we're no longer watering and fertilizing it. We're moving over to somebody else. So that's really this, that's another reason why change is hard, is because we're stuck in these patterns. They're very strong and charged by emotion, and it's difficult to know, okay, well, how do I move out of that person?
When you say patterns and charged emotion, what I think of triggers, like things that just trigger you. And I feel like most of us, if we're not mindful of it, we're triggered all the time. Whether it's, I've got two children, for example, so trying to get out to get to school in the morning, someone doesn't want to put their shoes on. Oh, like we're in a hurry, and then you're not even aware of it, and then all of a sudden, come on, I get a bit frustrated and let's get out, and it gets really stressful. And that's just one example of like a 15-minute window of my day. So these patterns are thickened over time, and I'm assuming with every single trigger, they're probably thicker, getting thicker and thicker and thicker.
Yeah, the trigger is something that releases the pattern. It starts the pattern. But because you engage in the same activities after you're triggered over and over again, that pattern is getting stronger and stronger. It's like you're going to the gym and just working out the same things over and over again. And so what we would do is try to break apart that pattern down to its roots and really understand what's going on there, why you're getting frustrated, and then try to design a new pattern the way you would like to be. So, obviously that pattern is not helpful to you. You're experiencing negativity from it. We would understand why, and then we would try to loosen your grip on that pattern. Like, how can we, what's going on there, and how can we weaken your attachment to that pattern, like your response to it? And
Yes,
then
please.
we would try to design a new pattern that is reflective of how you'd really like it to go, how you would like to think, feel, and behave in those moments. And there may be other things you choose to do with your kids, or different processes you set up with them in the morning, or however that goes. But it's really also about how you are in those times, right? And then once we outline that, then we would start to practice this new pattern, and then you would, over time, because you're not engaging in the old pattern of frustration and other types of, emotions and thoughts, that begins to get weaker, and you begin to get better at this, at acting out this new pattern that you've designed for yourself.
One difficulty I see with this is that you've got your old habits, you've got yourself basically fighting, or your brain fighting to get you back into that pattern of comfort. So where's the bridge between this is my old deeply rooted oak tree and this is the new sapling of all the new things that I'm trying to reprogram? What's the bridge there?
Yeah, so
What does one have to do?
it really gets down to loosening the grip of this old pattern over you, because it's the glue that's holding on to it, right? And so if you think about, like, maybe a jar that you bring out of your pantry and you can't turn the lid on it because it's stuck, that's like these patterns. And so what you need to do is you need to tap the lid on the counter to loosen it so that you can open the jar. Okay. And so what we're trying to do is loosen the grip of this pattern over you by really analyzing it in depth. Because a lot of times these patterns, again, start really early in childhood, and we could go back, we would uncover what you're experiencing in the moment of this pattern, and really go back to the origins of it in terms of why it is what it is. And then we would try to loosen your grip on that so that you're, and a lot of times just coming to the understanding of this is where it originated. Maybe your parents got frustrated with you, right? And you're somehow reenacting this with your own kids. or there's just something going on there, but it's not how you want to be. So we would, even just coming to grips with this is where the origins of it started, is really eye-opening for people, and it begins to connect the dots. And then we would try to find some, you know, evidence that, you know, this pattern that you started many, many years ago is not serving you well today. And so, you know, and we would find the costs of it. Like, what is this pattern costing you now?
Yeah.
Like, it's affecting my relationship with my kids. It's affecting how the rest of my day goes. Like, the costs are high. Mm-hmm. And so once we start to eat at this glue, which is really the emotional attachment to this pattern, it begins to loosen it. And what your brain then becomes is willing to consider other options, okay? Because you've identified that all the negative things that this pattern is doing in your life, and that it's really not serving you well anymore. So now you begin to open up new possibilities. Your brain's willing to accept other ideas. Mm. And then that's when we work with the individual to understand how they would like to be. What is the new identity that they have for themselves, that they would, how they would like to think, feel, and act. And you know, generally it's not over one pattern. It's, you know, it's infiltrating all parts of their lives.
Mm.
And so we really spend time with the person's values, like what's really important to them, what's the values that they want to guide their life, their belief systems, their strengths, their psychological needs, like what needs are they trying to fulfill within themselves. And then we design this new person, even draw a picture of that person, and spend time really feeling what it's going to be like to be that person when we actually finally become them. And so we get this really strong mental picture of what this person is going to be like when we get there. And then we begin to feel all the reward that's going to come from it. And so then the brain gets used to, and by doing that and doing it regularly, the brain now is starting to shift its neurons. And it's beginning to form the real basis of small little root systems, new neural pathways that represent this new person. So remember that we're trying to move away from this strong rooted person to this new person, but it starts by planting the idea of that person, that tree.
Mm-hmm.
Then as we continue to envision that person and all the good things that are going to come from being that person, because we're finally going to be able to be that person we've always wanted to be. Think about how good that feels.
Mm-hmm.
And close your eyes and imagine it. And this, like, I'm going to have no regrets the rest of my life because I'm going to be living life authentically, who I really want to be. Like, this is the person I'm going to be proud to be. Okay. And so then there's reward in that. And deeply held reward, like it's intrinsically valuable to a person to want to be the person that they've always wanted to be. Mm-hmm. So then the brain starts to experience this, and all the reward that's coming from visualizing this identity, okay? And the brain loves reward. The brain's very attracted to reward. The brain doesn't do anything unless there's reward in it. That's what these neurochemicals are all about. And so if you can begin to tether reward to this new vision of yourself, and you're fastidious and committed to practicing this way of being for a while, then what you begin to find is that over a period of weeks, you start to gradually, even without noticing, becoming this person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no light switch that goes off. You just notice, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks down the road, you are shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like all of a sudden becoming that person and you're happy. And then when your brain is experiencing this, now it's beginning to understand who you're trying to be. And it also notices that you're happier, that you're experiencing more reward. And because the brain loves to follow reward, it comes along with you more willingly. So what's starting off is difficult in the beginning because the brain had no idea what you're trying to envision, doesn't know if it's safe, doesn't know if there's reward in it. Now you're convincing it. It's being committed and acting out these processes. People sometimes start change, but they give up on it a few days in or a week in because they haven't experienced any reward from it, or they don't even know what the process is and how long they need to stick with it in order for it to take hold.
Yes, that's a really good point. You've said a word a few times now, and that word is practice. And I think that's perhaps what the key aspect of it is it's this practicing. I mean, you talk a lot about envisioning the self that you want to become. But in that daily practice, is that a meditation practice or is that a physical practice? Or is that like, how do you get those juicy rewards from a practice for your mind to shift?
Yeah, all day long, it's all day, every day.
Okay.
In other words, you envision this person, what every aspect of what they're going to be like, and then you diagram your life that way. So from the moment that you wake up to the moment that you fall asleep, you could be re-diagramming everything. You could be re-diagramming how you plan your day. You could be re-diagramming when you go to sleep and wake up. You could re-diagram, you know, the half an hour before you go to sleep. You could re-diagram all your diet, the things you eat in order to support this transformation. You could re-diagram your exercise program. You and I were talking before the show. I do all my hardest work in the morning when my mental resources are highest. And then I do something to re-energize and help my brain recover around noon when it's starting to get fatigued. I have diagrammed every moment of my entire day built around serving my brain and being the kind of person that I want to be. You can also start by just trying something and seeing if that benefits you. And so then by doing that, you begin to experience success, reward. And your brain, then you get motivated because, again, you're experiencing a benefit out of doing it. So that's a lot of times we'll just start with something simple.
Yeah. The lowest hanging fruit, maybe.
Yeah. So we can have a good experience. You and your brain begin to say, you know, that was pretty cool. Now I'm beginning to get what you're trying to tell me. Let's go to the next layer. And so this is not like flipping a switch overnight, you're a different person. This is starting to layer in, rebuild your life. You know, it's not a race. This is a never-ending quest to become this ideal version of yourself. And frankly, it's never a place you ever really get to. It's not about the outcome. It's about the journey and the process and falling in love with just putting these pieces of your life together in a way that serve you better. And so falling in love with that daily process of just being better, that's really it. It's just, I'm on this path to being the best version of myself. I doubt I'm ever going to get there, but that's okay. I just love being on the path. Mm-hmm. And so that's really where we're trying to get to. And it's not an overnight thing. People begin to experience serious improvements in their life in 6 to 12 weeks. I typically work with somebody for 12 weeks. Mm. And at that point, they've had enough experience with it and then know enough about what they're trying to do that they can self-manage themselves.
Yeah, that's nice. That has a time frame, actually. That the time frame, it's not like, do I need to do this forever until I get to an end point? But rather, do the work for, it sounds like an intense 12 weeks as well. You're kind of uprooting, unsticking, re-diagramming your life and then practicing it every day.
Yeah. And you're going to have little setbacks. It's like 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Because what will happen is you'll get triggered by something that stresses you out.
Throws you back.
And it pulls you back to an old rooted pattern. But what will happen there is that you'll start catching yourself being pulled back and you'll stop it. And so instead of watering and fertilizing, going all the way through the pattern with all the emotions and all the thoughts and all the actions that you used to, you'll catch yourself. And you'll say, nope, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to re-strengthen that old pattern. You'll pause, you'll breathe, you'll calm your nervous system, and you'll ask yourself, how does my new version of myself, and you can even name, like you can have your current name and you can name your future self. How would, you know, instead of Alana, how would Amy, want to act, feel, and behave in this way? Mm-hmm. And then you go back to practicing that pattern. That's really what it is. And it kind of gets to be fun, you know, if you really look at it that way, because this is a journey, right? And it's meant to be fun and you're meant to find reward out of it. Otherwise, why do it? And so this is all about making our lives better, not more complicated or difficult.
Yeah. You said something before about finding authenticity. And I find this word to be a bit buzzy these days, being authentic. But it really sat with me, loving what you do. I find, if we can go a little bit esoteric for a second, that authenticity is kind of connecting with maybe traditionally what people would call God, or connecting with like a higher sense of self, sense of purpose, maybe. So it's finding not the version of yourself that's just rolling off the back of different and old patterns, but rather connecting with something that you feel, yeah, perhaps in love with, or in love with yourself, and in love with what you do and how you do it and the way that you do it.
Yeah, the key is to try to get full alignment in everything that you, all the ways that you're feeling, acting, and behaving have to be in alignment with this person that you want to be. And fulfilling your needs, because all of this is designed to meet our own psychological needs. So things like significance and connectedness or togetherness with other people, equality, stability. There's 6 or 8 core psychological needs that all of us are trying to meet. And when we're not in alignment with meeting those needs is when we become uncomfortable and not comfortable with who we are, because we're not serving our basic psychological needs. And so really, I think being authentic is creating a version of yourself with patterns in it that helps serve our own psychological needs in a way that's authentic. We're not worried about what others expect of us, because if that's not fulfilling our psychological needs, and we're acting out patterns because of what other people expect or what we think that they want, that's not authentic. So it's all about serving this version of ourself that is truly who we are, and building our life around serving that identity.
Which, for me, when I think about that, because it's something that I'm actually practicing, similar to what you're talking about, but I've another route that I've kind of found myself on. And it's something that I do try to do. But then even, and I mean, I guess maybe I haven't done it for long enough, perhaps that's it. But then I get confused with what is the version of, between, let's say, myself and Amy, or myself and my past self, even the version I am becoming, which I would probably call Alana, or my past self, this old person who I get confused. Is that, where am I? Like that alignment, it gets a bit foggy sometimes. So when you're on this journey of the whole transition, because it is a lifelong thing, and you are going to come back. And as you said, it's, acknowledging it, seeing that it's happening. Are there typical, I guess, red flag signs that one needs to look out for when they are, this moving forward process as they come back and then to go forward again?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of your own gauging your own mental health. How are you feeling with the activities and experiences that are going on in your mind? Do they feel like they're in alignment, or do you feel discomfort from them? Are you misaligned in some way? And so it's really important to, I think, understand, being self-aware, understand how we're doing at all times. A lot of self-reflection. And that's where, I think having this relationship with your brain really helps, because the brain is giving you signals all the time as to how it's doing. When it's tired and fatigued, it's telling you that it needs to recover and reset. But do we know that? And do we take action upon it to help it? Or do we just push through? And so there's this relationship that I try to help people build with their brains and their minds to really help each other, respect each other, meet each other's needs. The brain is there to be your partner, but it does have needs like, every other part of your body. And I think that we just think that the mind is there to, serve us, irrespective of what it needs, that it doesn't have any needs. And it does. It's a tank of mental resource, but you know, that tank is finite. Those resources are finite. And how well are we, you know, filling that tank with mental resources, and how well are we spending those resources? And there's all kinds of things we can do to understand how to maximize our mental resources as we start every day, and then to spend those resources efficiently throughout the day. So just as an example of that, our brains are geared for about 90-minute, highly attentive, highly focused thought. And at the end of 90 minutes, and that can vary by person, but I'm just giving you, you know, rough average. At the end of 90 minutes, the efficiency of our thought begins to decline rapidly, the quality of the thought. And we start to get fatigued. And so if we're partnering with our brains, then we know that we should build in about 3 to 4 minute respites at the end of every 90-minute period, where we get up, go out and get some sunshine, walk around, turn our brain off, breathe, meditate, something, you know, do some push-ups, send some blood and oxygen to our brain to help the neurotransmitters reset. And then we can go right back at it, okay, because it's given the brain what it needs. So that's just one tiny example of an all-day-long approach that if you understood how your brain worked and how to get the most out of it and how to help it spend its resources wisely, just think about how much more you'd get out of your day. And so that's really, you know, what I think a lot of this is about is just a whole different perspective on our brains, looking at it as our friend and partner, not as something we're battling against. And when it gives you discomfort, when it gives you signals that, you know, that are unpleasant, it's talking to you.
I love that. I really, really love that. It's about working with your body, rather than like abusing your body or just being like, come on, body, like keep up. Today we've got an appointment. You know, get up, have a coffee, take some painkillers, and get on with life. It's this reconnection with or listening to your body. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So you know, if you were, you know, going on a hike with your family and, you know, one of the family members needed to stop and rest, you would stop and rest. During the day, your brain needs to stop and rest to reset. So are you going to allow it? You know, or are you just going to say tough luck, you know, push through it? And that's just, that is a very short-sighted approach to, because we all want the best brain performance we can get. And by telling the brain to push through things when it needs a rest, or needs sustenance, or needs exercise, or needs meditation, whatever it needs, we're not serving it well, and therefore we're not serving ourselves well.
Which is why burnout is such a common thing. It's just push, 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 until your body basically just shuts down and can't go any further.
Yeah, and if you're doing that day after day after day, you know, that's where, you know, we become unhappy. We start to get mental health issues. You know, there's anxiety, there's depression, all because we're not listening to our brains and partnering with it and giving it what it needs.
This is, I really love this whole conversation, the whole approach, just because mental health, stress, burnout, anxiety, huge topics today. And it's not made any better by having these wonderful screens that is just constantly in our faces, and work that's pushing us, and then life and everything that's on top as well. So
let me just ask you that. So here's another example of stress. Okay. So stress is a highly expensive activity in terms of our metabolic resources. So again, if we start every day with 30 gallons of mental fuel, there are certain activities that we pursue that are not highly expensive, and there are others that are very expensive. Stress is a very expensive. It spends that mental fuel very rapidly. And so would we look at stressful situations differently if we knew that it was eating up our mental resources twice as fast as not having stress? You know, so it's a whole different way to look at stress if we just began to experience it and said, no, I don't want to go through this because it's going to chew up my mental resources quicker than it otherwise would, and it's going to screw up the rest of my day. So now we manage with our brains our days based on how well we were spending our mental resources. We would avoid stress or anything else that feels metabolically expensive. And whenever it's something's uncomfortable, that's metabolically expensive. We would manage our days completely differently.
And that works when you are connected with your body, because when you are not, then the stress takes over whether you want to think about it or not. You know, like even if you try to push it out, it will still seep its way in. So to be able to say, do I have the energy to expend stress on that right now? No. And I think that comes back to living that authentic self, like having the power in yourself to say, not dealing with that right now.
Yeah, those are patterns. So the way we traditionally may deal with stress, if we do it over and over again and it's unhelpful, that's a pattern that we get good at. And that's why the brain keeps going there. So being able to intervene in that, develop a whole new pattern. When I see stress, it's my brain talking to me that it needs to calm down. My nervous system needs to calm. So here's what I'm going to do instead. I'm going to be sensitive. Think of stress as like your child. If your child were uncomfortable, you would comfort them. If your brain is uncomfortable and stressed, you need to comfort it, okay? Instead of pushing through or engaging it even more and making the situation worse.
Do you think people can do this by themselves, or do they need to be guided? Just as an example, people who are trying to deal with stress, sometimes, just because I work with nutrition, sometimes it's often, this is stressful, I cope with stress by overeating, as an example. So they're kind of coping with stress with something else, which is also a pattern. So, and then how do you get yourself out of that pattern of patterns of, I can imagine it's like a web of different patterns that are coinciding.
Yeah, well, so in that case, you know, I would assume maybe the person overeating and dealing with stress that way is not in alignment with who that person really wants to be. So we, again, diagram this new version of ourselves that doesn't handle stress that way and that doesn't want to overeat because that's not who they want to be. It doesn't meet their needs. It's not what their values are. And so we design new ways to look at stress. It's really about getting into the underlying roots of why stress is such a pattern for them. And where it originated, loosening the grip on it, and figuring out a different way to deal with these situations that are causing stress. So it's really about, you know, yeah, you'd like to stop the overeating, but it's really about stopping the root causes of what's causing the stress in the first place, neurologically, redesigning them so that they don't experience stress for those particular situations.
That's the thing. It's not the food, it's not the alcohol, it's not the drugs. It's those root causes which then play out into them.
Yeah. And so when you're an addict and you're recovering like me, I had to stop the addiction part of it. But then there was all the other stuff I was using and consuming substances to resolve. And then I had to deal with those. So you had to stop the addictive behavior, but then you had to deal with the underlying mental discomforts that were causing the addiction.
And so for everyone who's thinking, yes, this is something that I need to start doing, maybe you can even think back to when you were in the position of having to take the first steps in breaking these patterns. Is there one thing that would be the first step that someone would have to take? What's one thing that we could start doing today, which is going to perhaps be the catalyst or allow us to this journey for us to unravel as well?
Well, all of this starts with awareness and acceptance that I'm aware of what I'm doing, that it's a problem, and I accept the fact that it's not working for me and that I need to do something different. And that is, you know, that is truly not holding on to any hope or vestiges of staying in old patterns. That is like, I'm tired of this. I'm sick and tired. That's what happened to me. I knew the gig was up. I knew that I could not keep going the way I was going. It was over. I had zero desire to hold on to any part of it. And I was willing and ready to do anything that anybody told me to do to get better. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how. when I was willing. So awareness, acceptance, and willingness. And then it's a matter of, I think this information and knowledge about what's involved in change is really important. Because it's like anything else. If somebody's trying to teach you something new and you can't understand what it is that they're trying to teach you, or you can't get your arms around it, it's very hard to engage in it because it's just unknown. Like everybody wants to know what the plan is in order before they start to engage in the plan. And so that's what really helped me. And I did all this education and research on my own, is to understand like how all this worked.
Map it out.
Yeah. And then it helps me engage in the process. And I think that that's another secondary component, is to figure out where the help is for you to help guide and direct you in this process. You know, there's a bunch of different, you know, there's therapy, I mean, I know people have all different types of modalities that they can pursue to find change. But one thing I will tell you is that what's important to you is to have lasting change that's sustainable, that you can begin to not have to try and work at, that it's just automatic and part of your life. You have to have neurological change in your brain. These neurons actually have to shift and move to reflect this new version of yourself. And, you know, there are specific processes that the brain wants to follow in order to go there. And that's, you know, where I've ended up in my work, is that, you know, I understand what it's going to take for the brain to go from point A to point B.
Yeah, wonderful. George, I really got so much out of this conversation, as I'm sure everyone who is also listening, because everyone, I think, wants to get out of these patterns. Everyone wants to be able to optimize the way in which they function, so it's aligning and so it feels good, so it's not stressful, so they get to the end of the day and they do have those tanks still full and they have space for life, to live life and not just feel exhausted and constantly keeping up and running on coffee.
The brain is changeable and adaptable. It's a concept called neuroplasticity. Our brains are never, you know, our brains have formed patterns that reflect how we've been throughout our lives until today, but they can change. And the brain, the neurons are fully willing to reorganize and pattern themselves in a new and different way. It just requires you to begin to act out who that new person is. And then over time, brain will follow.
Where can we find you if someone wants to tap into more of the work or some resources? Is there a hub or a main spot where you hang out?
My website is a good place to visit. It's georgehaymaker.com. There's also a link there to schedule a free, repeat free discovery call, where we can spend some time together, just kind of, you know, learning about you and what's troubling you, and whether, you know, we might be a good fit together, or if not, that's fine. You know, I've made a new friend. So it's a no high pitch, no pressure type of conversation. So please reach out. I'd love to talk to you. You'll also find me on LinkedIn, where I post a lot of content.
George, thank you so much. Thanks for the work that you do and the transformation that you ultimately bring to this world. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ilana.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review, as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening, be well, and I'll catch you next time.